We're taking you behind the scenes with entrepreneurs that run product-based businesses, people that were once in your shoes. Our TSBC alumni, speakers, and friends will shed light on growth strategies, resources, and inspiration to help you scale your creative business. Hey friends, I'm Katie Hunt, the founder of Trade Show Bootcamp, and welcome to Proof to Product. Today I had the pleasure of sitting down with Suann Song. She's a graphic designer and the founder of Appointed. Appointed is an American-made brand of carefully designed desktop products that make utility look luxurious. Prior to starting Appointed, Suann conducted an exhaustive and unsuccessful search to find well-made desktop products that are manufactured in the U.S. When she came up empty-handed, she decided to create her own. In March 2015, Suann launched Appointed through a Kickstarter campaign and reached her goal of $25,000 in the first 5 days. On today's episode, Suann is sharing what it was like to launch a brand and product line through Kickstarter. She's sharing behind-the-scenes info on why she's also redesigning the Appointed website and what that process looks like. And finally, Suann reminds us that relationships and fresh product are at the core of running a successful product-based business. Hey, Suann, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
Oh, I'm so excited to talk to you. Your notebooks and products are just, they're some of my favorites on the market right now. So I'm excited to hear the backstory to how you built this brand. And I know our audience is going to enjoy hearing it too. So before we jump into like what you're doing now with Appointed, can you give us your backstory on how you got into this creative field?
For sure. And well, so first, thank you so much for having me. And coming from any compliments coming from fellow paper people mean a huge deal to me because I know you see lots of paper and you're in it daily. So thank you.
Of course.
So we're Appointed just turned 3 in March of this year. And it is one of those things that was in my head for a very long time. I'm a paper person from when, as far as I can remember, I collected stationery. I had Hello Kitty stationery. I played paper store with my sister. And so ever since I was little, it's sort of been my passion. But I came kind of in a long, windy road to this point. But I feel like, or I think everything that I've done in my professional career has informed everything that we've done at Appointed and even building it, growing it, and sustaining it.
I love that.
But I went to school for completely unrelated art history. I came to Washington, D.C. and fell into a job at a performing arts center. I knew I wanted to be in the arts in some way, shape, or form. And what I did there at the arts center was for 5 years, I did PR, marketing, and development, and had always had sort of this creative side in me and on the side. Designed my wedding invitations, had always loved paper, designed invitations for people on the side. And so when we had our son, who's now 11, I thought, let me see if I can do something with this. And so what I did was I took a letterpress class right after he was born. I knew I was going to be on maternity leave. And from that moment, I knew I needed and wanted to do something with letterpress printing, whether it would be a hobby or something, an Etsy shop on the side. And so that's where sort of the paper side of the my professional career started. It's 11 years ago. And what I did was I love letterpress printing. I designed and printed wedding invitations. And it sort of very organically grew where we became one of the top wedding invitation designers and printers in the Washington, D.C. area. So I did that for a good 5 years. And from there, a client or a former bride would say to me, I'm the head of events at this organization. Can you design and print the invitation for this organization? Then that led into, can you do the logo for the event? Can you? And then it sort of super organically grew into branding. And then that's what I did for the last 5 years of Simple Song Design. And that's what I called my creative studio. And I, for several years, had sort of dream clients where I was designing packaging, products, logos, websites, collateral, everything for small to medium-sized businesses. But along there, I knew I always knew I wanted my own product-based company, and I knew it would be around paper. And so I got the idea for Appointed about 5 years ago, where I saw sort of a need in the market for just gender neutral, really well-made, American-made products. And that's where it all started. I designed sort of what would be my dream product line. and then figured how much money I would need to start the company, because running a service-based company versus a product-based company are two entirely different things. And absolutely, I'm very risk averse. And so I knew I needed capital to start that company, but I wanted to know what I was getting into, how much it was going to cost, what it would require to scale. And, you know, we'll talk about a lot of those things, but that's sort of where it all started.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Your point about running a service-based business versus a product-based business is something I'm getting a ton of questions about lately, because I did the reverse, right? I had my product-based business and then branched out more and placed more of my focus and time on the service-based side through boot camp. And I think they are such different business models, and they do require you to stretch yourself in ways that maybe feel for uncomfortable or you're unsure about. And so it's fun for me to hear how much research and forethought you gave this before you actually made that jump. Yeah.
I mean,
to do appointed.
I probably didn't. I realize it now how different the two types of businesses are. I mean, I knew it then. And what the biggest difference to me was the financial side of what you needed to even start a product-based company, because the service-based company, you can sort of go client by client and just sort of hope the next client comes through. But that, because I'm so risk averse, and I didn't want to start the company being in debt or with a loan or investments. And so, it was a solid year of researching, finding manufacturers, figuring out how much money I would need, figure how much money I would need in year one, two, and three. And even still now, I think that's sort of on the product-based side, things like managing inventory or cash flow are still my biggest challenges, but that I think that was the biggest learning curve for me.
Absolutely. So in this year of research, were you actually getting samples and things so that you could test papers and quality of work? Or were you truly just pricing things out so that you had just a general ballpark of how much cash you would need to launch this thing?
A little bit of both. I mean, for me, and still our top priority is making the best product that we possibly can. Mm-hmm. So it was finding those manufacturers that would work with us to make the covers of our notebooks just the way that I wanted to and to test them. And I was really fortunate. I mean, it took a lot of calls and emails to find the right manufacturing partners. But once I did, they, you know, a little bit hesitantly, they sort of believed in what we were doing and worked with me in making prototypes for a solid year.
Nice. So you actually launched Appointed in March 2015 through Kickstarter.
Yeah.
And I would love to discuss what that process was like. Did you know from the start that was how you were going to raise these funds? Or how did that come about that you turned to Kickstarter?
Yeah, that's a good question. So once I did all the research on trying to figure out how much money I would need to start this company and get market or product made, which I determined it was about $25,000. I researched, should we get an SBA loan? Should we get an investor? Should we be self-funded? Should we do crowdsourcing? And so we ended up doing the crowdsourcing, and I did it for a couple of reasons. I did it because through Kickstarter, and I don't know if you or your listeners are familiar, you're essentially presenting an idea or a concept or a product or anything that you need funding for. And so for me, we didn't have a physical product made. I had prototypes and took photos and did a lot of renderings and described what we needed to make. But essentially, people are believing in you and your idea and deciding to fund it, whether it's $25 or $100. And we did very small increments from 20 to 350 being our most. And so I did it because I wanted to see what the reaction would be. I mean, if the Kickstarter was going to be a flop and I literally put everything out there, invested in a video, produced a video, put all the information on the Kickstarter page, and if people weren't going to support it, then I thought, okay, maybe this isn't a good idea. And so it's scary to put yourself out there, but we did a goal of 25,000, so much research and preparation to put that Kickstarter page up. And then we ran it for 30 days and we reached our goal in the first 5 days, I want to say.
Wow. Congratulations.
It was crazy. And then by the end of the 30 days, we raised about $56,000 with a little over almost 700 different backers.
Wow.
And so it sort of validated the idea that based on just sort of what we were presenting to the public that this is, here's our idea, here's how we want to produce it and why we want to do it.
Yeah.
And so, and then it also gave us the funding. So it sort of gave me like this boost of confidence before going to actual market with it, that we were sort of onto something and going to fill the niche that I believe that there was for the product.
The response had to have, in your own words, validated you, but also given you a whole like proof of concept of,
for
like,
sure.
Yes. Okay. We're on to something here. You know, I've never run a campaign on Kickstarter, but I have supported others. And I hear it's a lot of work to create these campaigns. You already touched on it a little bit that yeah. you produced a video that was very high quality. You had to come up with your pricing tiers. You had to decide how much you really wanted to ask for, because don't, and excuse me for my ignorance here, but if you don't hit your goal that you establish, you don't get any of the money.
You don't get, so it's all or nothing. Exactly.
Okay. So that's yes. a tricky line too. You don't want to go too high. And not get it, but you don't want to go too low either, I assume.
Exactly. So you just essentially want to put out there how much funding you actually do need to bring whatever product or concept to market. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of the legwork was the video, just putting together the entire campaign. Like you said, the tiers of how much you want to raise, help, like in what increments, what your backers receive in return right. for their generous contribution. And so based on research, we ran our campaign for 30 days. And it's essentially, because I'm a very much behind the scenes person, I'm very comfortable behind my computer. And I, you know, the thought of asking for money, let alone asking for money for 30 days straight, was it was a lot. And it was, you just have to keep on putting yourself out there until the end of the campaign. And so it's just doing as much press, doing influencer outreach, following up with all of your backers. And then once the campaign ends and you're actually, that's when a lot of the work is actually starting, because then you put your products into production and then you have right. to fulfill your campaign promises and getting product out there. Because I've read there's a good 30 to 40% of Kickstarter campaigns, even though they're successful, they don't actually make it to market and the product doesn't happen and backers don't get their products. And which is crazy to me too.
That is crazy. Is that because they underestimated how much capital they'd need?
Yeah.
Is it they underestimated the process, or they hit
sort
a hiccup? They
sort of a lot of it where the product couldn't get to production, or they ran out of funding, or all sorts of things. So that was the last thing I wanted to do. If people are going to put their money, invest their money, whether it's $20 or $350 into this product or idea that I had. So I wanted to fulfill it, and I wanted to fulfill it early if we could.
Yeah. Did anything surprise you about the process with Kickstarter?
That's a good question. I don't know necessarily. I mean, getting funded that fast surprised me. And a lot of it was I did a lot of legwork beforehand, because I remember there was a statistic I read for campaigns that didn't reach 20% of their goal within the first 7 days. A huge percentage of them did not fulfill or meet their goal.
Didn't meet it.
And so that statistic scared me. And so, you know, I called in every favor and every person, Instagrammer I knew. And, you know, so I think getting funded as quickly as we did surprised me. And I was so grateful, and even grateful to those backers who are still our customers today.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think it's just sort of what was refreshing is people backing and supporting an idea that they liked just for purely seeing something that they liked, you know?
Yeah.
And our goal from the very beginning was to create a gender neutral product. And I remember it was really important to me to have men who did not necessarily know me, my brand, just purely buy it or back us based on what they saw on the Kickstarter campaign. And almost 35% of our customers now are men, and about, I want to say 20, at least a quarter of the backers on our Kickstarter campaign were men. So that was another thing that validated sort of the concept.
Yeah, absolutely. Some of my best greeting cards that I sold through Kelp Designs were the masculine ones. I think there was a real, and that was like 2013, 14 when I was releasing those. And there was such a need in the market for something that, you know, still had the sentiment they were looking for, but had the look and feel that they wanted. So
I still think that there's a need in the market. Mm-hmm. I think that's just by nature of who owns and runs stationery companies, but I think that there is definitely a market for men in stationery, paper goods, office, and sort of, and that thankfully that works for
absolutely.
Us.
Absolutely. So yeah, you have a background in PR and marketing, as you mentioned. Mm-hmm. Hearing you talk about the Kickstarter, it sounds like that was really influential in helping you to build the momentum yes. you needed to reach your goal. Can you share yeah. some of the strategies you utilized, whether it's with the Kickstarter or just in general? How are you leveraging this knowledge that you have from your past career in running this business?
So I always say that my background, ever since from interning at the Kennedy Center to working for a PR agency, every single step of the way to running my own creative studio, to having wedding clients, every single step of the way has informed so much of what I do at Appointed. For the Kickstarter campaign, in general, in what I learned in PR, in sort of a philosophy that I apply now is, I really believe people buy from people, whether it's a huge, huge company to a tiny little Etsy store to a small company like mine. And I think I really put out there what I genuinely believed in this product, why I was making it. And that was the pitch I made to bloggers, to Instagrammers. And really, there were a handful of men's lifestyle blogs that I happened to have read for a really long time. And while the blogging isn't as huge as it used to be, even when we did this campaign 3 years ago, there were a handful of lifestyle blogs that were geared towards men that I had read for a really long time. And I wrote to them. And there was one called Continuous Lean, and I'd read his blog for a really long time. And I just wrote to him and I said, look, this is what I'm doing. I know you don't write about Kickstarter campaigns, but if you would just take a look at what we're doing, here's why I'm doing it. And he wrote back, I think within a few days, and said, I don't usually write about Kickstarter campaigns, but I love what you're doing. And he posted about us. And I still keep in contact with him every now and again on Instagram, but I think it's sort of that philosophy that I wrote a genuine email, and he's a person that writes a very popular blog, but just so there was some sort of a connection there and wrote about us, and a huge amount of traffic came from his blog to our Kickstarter campaign. And I attribute a lot of our success of the campaign to him.
That's amazing. I love what you said about people are just, you know, people buy from people. I 100% agree with you. Business is all about the relationships we're building.
Yeah.
You never know when somebody in your life is going to come back in and need, you know, be a buying customer or have a referral for you or, yeah. you know, I think it's just so important that we do remember the human quality in what we're doing yes. here and
yeah.
and to be as authentic and real as we can in our emails that we send and our social media posts. And, you know, there's the talk about transparency and all of that, but really yeah. I think it's more than that. It's more about the human connection and just relating to people on a real, true basis.
Yeah. I mean, we have so many stories and incidences where it's really a single person at the New York Times who saw our notebooks in the store and we wrote an email and now they're one of our biggest custom mm-hmm. clients or customers at Appointed. But it's just that human connection. And I think it's so easy to forget that because we're so behind our phones and our computers all the time and you don't know where an email is going. But at the end of it or on the other side of it, it's another yeah. person. And that's something that I try to remember all the time and I try to relate to our
absolutely.
Team.
I agree with you.
Yeah.
So switching gears a little bit, you are in the process of releasing several new products right now, as well as launching mm-hmm. a brand new website. I mean, on their mm-hmm. own, these are two big projects, but doing them at the same time is like a time I got to give you major kudos. But I'd love to dig into your motivations and thought process in redesigning your website. What prompted you to redo it? Was something broken? Were you just wanting a new style? What was kind of happening there?
So it's a little bit of everything. So what we did was, we talked about this before we started this podcast, was up until this year, we've done the National Stationery Show in New York now every year. And this year we decided not to, for a variety of reasons, cost being one of the big ones. And so what we decided to do is take those funds that we would have normally used to participate in the National Stationery Show and invest that into a new website. So right now our business is, and this was the intention when we started the company, is about 50% wholesale, 30% is custom orders, and then the other 20% is okay. e-commerce. And so that's we intentionally do that. That'll continue to be sort of our business model, because for me, I believe that if you love our products online or in a photo or on Instagram, if you see it in person, you'll love it that much more, just because it's a very tactile product, from the book cloth material to the paper to all the small little details that may not translate over a photo.
It's gorgeous. It's absolutely gorgeous. If you guys haven't seen them, go find them.
Thank you. And so we'll continue to in time and resources and staff to really manage and maintain our wholesale relationships. But now we have a really strong customer base who go to our website and who purchase from our website. So direct to consumer. Yep. And the website that we have now, I worked with a freelance developer and we created the website, and it's fine, but it doesn't necessarily, I don't believe, reflect our product, our growth. It doesn't show off the story behind the product, the story behind, you know, we're very proudly American made, every single component of our products. So I don't think our website, or I know our website now, doesn't show that depth. And so I wanted to show that depth, the story behind it, have a much better user experience. The mobile version of our website is not the best. And so we knew it was sort of time to make that investment. So it's probably beyond trade shows. It's the biggest investment we've ever made in the company, beyond product and staff. And so we hired a firm, and it was sort of one of those big grown up decisions. And we hired them in December and have been working the last 5 months, and it'll launch hopefully June 1st, if everything goes according to plan. Nice. But then if not, sometime this summer.
I have been through the process of talking to web designers and even branding people when I was thinking about refreshing my logo and things like that. And it's intense.
It's so intense.
I feel, and hopefully it was a little bit easier for you given your background of working on these types of projects. But for me, I had a hard time with it. I talked to too many different companies to get their philosophies and pricing and process and all of that stuff. But then choosing one to go with was very difficult too, because, you know, you want to make sure it's a fit in terms of personality, but design style, and also your goals for the project, you know, and what you want to get through. So I'm excited to see what you come up with. So you outsource the whole thing, design, development, all of it. Okay.
The entire thing, which was a really big decision for us, because by trade, I'm a graphic designer.
Right.
And so I never hired anyone in this capacity or at this level. And so we interviewed several firms. We ended up going with a small firm that, again, the people, they loved our product. They knew about our product even before we contacted them. And they were really just really passionate about the website, the project, and they sort of got me. And I almost feel like I just had a baby in September, and I almost feel like Appointed is like this other child that I've been grooming and raising. And it was such a big decision for me to sort of let it go and just let people do what they do really well and see it from their perspective. But the first round of designs, they nailed it. And they brought it to life in a way that I could have never done it. And so we're really excited. Now we just want to like tear down our current site and put up a new one.
Get going, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I know. I will say having fresh eyes on things is really valuable in my opinion. I think as entrepreneurs, we get tunnel vision, right? Mm-hmm. We're so focused on the products we're creating, the branding that we're working on, whatever it is, you know, we're just too close to it in a lot of ways. And what kind of pre-work, I don't even know what the technical or correct terms are, but like what kind of work did you do with them before they even started putting ideas to paper, so to speak?
Well, it was really interesting being on the flip side, because I was on the designer side for so long and had clients, is the amount of research they did and the questions and the everything that we did to inform that. It was almost like that the design just sort of came naturally after having all the information. But the bulk of it at this point has been the research portion of it and us providing, you know, this is what we want our cart to look like, or this is what we want the user experience to be like, or this is how we want our retailer page to function, and just providing all of that information. So I want to say the upfront work was really heavy for us, but then you can tell it's really informed their process. And for me, even though our products are very sort of simple at first glance, there's so much, and you know this, there's so much thought that goes into the paper, the what color we print our lines, the ruling of our lines, the coil, the size, how much the corners are rounded on our covers. And so to see someone take something that's so important to us and be really, really thoughtful about their design was, I was so appreciative, and I just, it was almost like a relief, like to be able to hand this off to someone and for them to deliver something that where you feel like, oh, okay, they get us.
This exceeds my expectations, or at least meets them. I know, to your point, it is like another child, right? You built this business and you're here, you're letting go of control and handing over the reins to somebody that doesn't have as much depth of knowledge about your business as you do, and just hoping it works out. Yes. So I understand how fragile that can feel. You know, you have been on both sides now. You're design, you know, as a designer and now as a client to somebody. What are, in general here, what are some missteps or misconceptions that you see product-based business owners, things they're doing or thinking when they're redesigning their websites that maybe they should change their frame of mind around it?
Keep really taking into consideration the user experience. Really making it easy, making it intuitive, just providing all the information, but in a very easily digestible way. I think a lot of the times what we do is it's either not enough information or it's not easy to navigate. And so I think for me, it was really important that we showed the depth of our story, but it really is about the user experience and making it enjoyable, easy, and most importantly, convenient. And so I think that that's, you know, what we spend probably a little too much time on customer service, and meaning where I don't, not enough information is on our current website, or it's not presented in the right way, where it's, it's like too much back and forth for our customer and it's not easy. And so we're hoping to resolve a lot of that on the new website and just make it an experience that matches our product better, because right now it's not quite there. And it was fine in year one and year two, but I think now that we've established ourselves as a reputable brand, I think it, we really want it to match the product, which I think a lot of the times people forget that, or the website is an afterthought, or the website is, you know, people have beautiful, beautiful product, but the website doesn't necessarily match that or the experience.
What you just said brought up two key things that I hear quite frequently from clients or just in our bootcamp community. The first being is, yes, you absolutely, whether it's a wholesale customer or a retail customer, you have to make it as simple as possible for them to buy, for them to understand your product, for them to understand how they would use their product if they're the end consumer, or how they display your product if they're a buyer on the wholesale side. And then two, I do think, listening to your story, I think it's totally appropriate for those younger businesses to create a website that works for them at the moment. Like, I think it's a catch 22, right? Like, we want to plan for the future and we want to have something we can grow into. But at the same time, sometimes things shift and change and we realize they're not working the way they want. So on one hand, I see people waiting too long to actually launch their website because they're trying to get it just right. And then on the other hand, I see people, to your point, of not providing enough information or explanation as to what they're doing. So I don't know where I'm going with this, other than to say we need to do the best we can with what we have in a given time. And, you know.
And I think when you're launching a business, the prioritizing, because there's only so much funding you have. And so whether you're going to put it to PR, you're going to put it to products, you can put it to your website. And for me, for us, fortunately, since I had the capabilities to design our own website, but I put, even till now, the first priority is putting it to product.
Right.
And versus, you know, we don't spend much money on ads. We, our product and having staffing ourselves appropriately, whereas where we put, you know, any cash flow that we had, and still what we do now.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So as you're leading into your launch of your new website, how are you going to share the news with your wholesale clients versus your retail clients? Do you have a different strategy for that for each one? Or are you going to do the same for both?
Yeah. So we get a lot of questions, and I'm, you know, I'm sure you hear this a lot too, is our retailers say, well, if you sell on your website, what is, what's the incentive for them to come into the store to buy? And so we, what I want to be really careful about with our retailers, because they, a lot of them know, and if not, hopefully most of them know, that they are our priority and they're a huge part of our growth and our story. Right. And the number of stores that we're in legitimize, helps to legitimize the brand as well. And so we definitely see the importance and value of our retailers. And so I think for us, it's two totally separate functions. if someone's going to buy on the website, they're probably going to buy on the website as opposed to go to a store. But there's a whole different customer base that go into stores that want to see it in person. Yeah. And so we'll, for the most part, the two functions or programs, e-commerce and our wholesales, operate separately. And so a lot of the times we'll give incentives to our retailers to order. We give them discounts or only products that are available to our retailers versus only e-commerce only.
Yeah, I really like that. I'm an advocate for making sure that if you're selling wholesale, that those customers are your first priority.
For sure.
And that plays into a lot of areas that many people don't think about. Their pricing on their website, how they're communicating mm-hmm. things on social media mm-hmm. or in their emails. So
yeah.
Cool. Well, what advice do you have for product-based business owners that are just getting started, that, you know, they have a concept or an idea in their head and they want to take it to market? What would you tell them now that you look back and you've been on this journey?
One of the things that I knew that we had to do was, so we released what we call our signature product, or is our notebooks. And so our notebooks come in 8 different colorways and each 3 different linings, but we have a bunch of different paper accessories that are built around our notebooks. So for instance, retailers almost always order notebooks and then they'll order additional accessories, whether it's adhesive notes or document folders or a memo pad to go with those products. So not only for merchandising that works out well, but two, for the customer, the goal is to provide tools that work throughout your workday. So you might take a notebook to a meeting, but at your desk, you have your memo pad that you write notes on. And so I knew going in, I had essentially at least 18 months of products planned out, not meaning it was like released every month, but after we launched the Kickstarter, then, or 3 months later, we launched e-commerce. And then a month later, we launched wholesale, and then had product releases planned now we do 3 times a year, but every 6 months. Mm-hmm. So what I always say to people, and what we still apply now, is you have to keep it fresh. You have to have something to talk about. And then you have to have, and not for the sake of just doing that, but you just need to keep your product line relevant and interesting and release new products. And it can just be 1 or 2 new releases, or it could be a full release of a new, entirely new category. But I think it's really important to keep it fresh and to, you know, whether it's a single new colorway or a new lining or, for greeting cards, a new series of cards, because I think that's just to keep retailers' attention and the customer's attention.
Absolutely. I mean, the number one question we hear from buyers on the wholesale side is what's new?
What's new?
What's new? What's new? What's new? And right. Even, you know, we hear from our alumni that go to craft shows regularly and see some of the same customers over and mm-hmm. over. They're asking the same on the retail side. So
yeah.
I agree with you. Keeping it relevant, keeping it fresh, and just building a system that enables you to be releasing new product on a regular basis, even if it's in small batches. It just shows that you're serious about what you're doing and you're dedicated to your craft and your business.
I think so. And we know, we heard from a number of big buyers early on that they wait to make, even if there's a line that's interesting, they'll wait until year 1 or 2 of the company just to make sure that they're consistently releasing products. And so I knew that going in, but it's harder than it seems. And just making sure that you're maintaining your line. And then also my biggest challenge, and even now when we're growing, which thankfully we are, is just to keep inventory on hand and predicting the inventory. But I think that for me, and I had no idea that's my biggest challenge now.
It is challenging because too, you're going into something, creating it without really knowing how much of it's going to sell and having to kind of, you know, place bets on what's going to be the best sellers.
Right. So. Right. And it's never what it's, a lot of the times it's never what you think it is.
I wholeheartedly agree with you. I swear every time I went to the National Stationery Show for the last like 9 years, I would choose this one's going to, this one's new. It's going to be my best seller. I love this one. It never was.
It never is. It's so funny how that works.
I know.
Yeah.
It's my judgment was off on it. So, where can people find you online? Where can they buy your products or follow you on social media?
So online, our website is appntd.com, and Instagram, which is probably our biggest social media platform, is Appointed Co. And that, we love our Instagram followers, and anytime we release a new product, that's where we'll announce it, and you see an immediate return and clicks. And so that's really nice. And for us, it works because our products, I think most of our customers have a very discerning eye. And so since Instagram is so visual versus Twitter or Facebook, which is less, it's great. And then in stores, we're in about almost 400 stores in the US, Canada, Europe, and Australia. And so that's been fun to see that grow literally store by store. And each, you know, saying people buy from people, it's learning each buyer and building a relationship and being genuinely appreciative for, you know, every order that comes in, $200 or $2,000. Yeah. So that's, it's been fun just to see it grow, something that you've had in your head for so long. And I think a lot of people, you know, hopefully can relate to that and be encouraged that it takes literally retailer by retailer to grow a wholesale program or an e-commerce program.
Well, you should be very proud of yourself. The brand is beautiful. The product is amazing. And it's been really fun to watch from the sidelines as you've grown this beautiful, amazing business. So congrats to you. And thank you so much for coming on today to share your experiences and knowledge
with us.
Thanks
so much. Thanks so much for having me. It's been fun.
Hey guys, it's Katie Hunt from Trade Show Bootcamp. I know that many of you have been patiently waiting for the return of our Paper Camp e-course. And I'm excited to tell you that our summer session is almost here. This is a four-week online program that kicks off on June 4th. You'll get new videos to watch each week on your own, and we'll have a live Q&A call each week with me and special guest experts. But you gotta act fast because registration closes on June 2nd. If you want to see your products on the shelves of retail stores, big and small, or if you want to launch or refine your wholesale program or exhibit at large-scale wholesale shows, this is the program for you. We cover product development, sales tools for wholesale, working with reps, marketing to retailers, and exhibiting at shows. To learn more and register, head on over to tradeshowcamp.com and then click on PaperCamp eCourse. That's tradeshowcamp.com, then PaperCamp eCourse. I look forward to having you join me.
Proof to Product is brought to you by Trade Show Bootcamp and hosted by me, Katie Hunt. Since 2011, TSBC has worked with hundreds of product-based businesses to help them uplevel, scale, and build profitable, sustainable companies. You can find our show notes and additional resources at prooftoproduct.com. And if you like what you heard today, please head over to Apple Podcasts to leave a 5-star review and subscribe. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back next week with a new episode.